With many such parables he spoke the word to them, as they were able to hear it. He did not speak to them except in parables, but he explained everything in private to his disciples. Early one morning, a man turned up at the vicarage in tears, saying, "Please, please, can you help? A kind and considerate family in the area is in great trouble. The husband has recently lost his job, and his wife cannot work because of her health problems. They have three young children to look after, and the man's mother lives with them because she's unwell and needs constant care. They have no money at the moment, and if they don't pay the rent by tomorrow morning, the landlord is going to kick them all onto the street, even though it's the middle of winter." The vicar replied, "That's terrible. Of course we will help. I will get some money from the church discretionary fund to pay their rent. Anyway, how do you know them?" To which the man replied, "Oh, I'm the landlord." Apart from giving us a wry laugh, that story is a modern-day parable. I have no idea whether it was a true story, but it relates to situations that are familiar to us, and we're left puzzling over the questions it poses. Was it about a naive vicar and a cunning landlord? Was it about a landlord who needed the money himself to feed his own family, or who really didn't want to make another family homeless? Was it simply about the vicar reflecting the generosity and compassion of God, no matter what the circumstances? The word parable, which is a translation of the Hebrew word mashal, means literally a setting or placing beside, and refers to a short story which is told to teach some spiritual truth. It's often described as an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And the parable form was known and used by Jewish teachers and enjoyed by the ordinary people way before the time of Christ, but Jesus used them to full and profound effect. There are about 40 parables of Jesus in the first three Gospels. The majority, like the two in our Gospel reading this morning, were told to reveal more and more of God's kingdom to his disciples. Others are addressed to those who are less willing to learn and state the challenge of the kingdom in almost picture form. Each gospel writer has his own emphasis in his choice of parables, and for Mark, it is to emphasize the secret character of God's kingdom. The parables are part of the mystery of Christ, only understood as a person comes to understand and believe in him. So what are the parables in our gospel reading this morning? The growing of the seed in secret and the growing of the mustard seed. Now, the scattering of seed is different from the sowing of seed. The parable of the sower comes earlier in this chapter and uses a different verb altogether. Jesus' listeners would have been quite shocked at the notion of precious, vital seed just being cast willy-nilly without any regard to where it might succeed. And here there is a clue, an enormous hint of the generosity of God, allowing his love, his word, however we interpret the parable, the possibility of taking root anywhere and in anyone. It isn't just sown in safe places and in safe people, it's scattered all over the place. And in this little parable, the farmer sleeps and rises night and day, just like the seed. And the word "rises" here is one of those used to describe the resurrection. The farmer doesn't seem to know how the seed grows, and yet it does. And my hunch is that there is an implication here that the farmer is doing all that he normally does in attending to the crop. I often say that as a church, as individual Christians, we are in the business of making connections between people and God. And as such, I want to suggest that all of us are living parables who scatter hope. After all, each one of us has an earthly story, warts and all, with a heavenly meaning. Living parables who scatter hope. We do that through our own commitment to Christ, the way in which we try to live our lives, the care and love of Christ that we show to our neighbours and our community, and through our worship. To some extent, this too is a scattergun approach, and we never know what bit of care, what conversation, what example, what act of worship has or will achieve for others. We are not to limit God's love or activity. His seed goes everywhere, and what's more, he is already at work in his world and in his people. In my day job as an archdeacon, I'm very much in contact with the parishes of our diocese. Although we are all concerned about a generation gap, and in some places a slow decline in numbers, I do not believe we are in terminal decline. We have someone amazing to offer people in the person of Jesus Christ, someone who can transform the lives of those we meet and enable them to make sense of all that life throws at them, all that life throws at us human beings, and give them hope. We will be in terminal decline if we simply think in terms of increasing the numbers of those who come to church and forget to work on our own commitment to Christ and refuse to look outwards and take his love and grace into his world. And although I do believe in sharing the gospel afresh in each generation, and that there is a real imperative not to be complacent and to discover new ways of being the church, of finding the right ways of being Christ in our communities and places of work, and of making our worship more open and accessible. Although I believe all that, I am a passionate believer in the importance of the parish system. I believe the parish system in the Church of England, with all its ability to evolve and adapt, to be one of the most enormous assets we have in making connections between people and God. Last week, I was away at a conference of archdeacons from neighbouring dioceses, and we were privileged to hear an after-dinner speech from a lady barrister who specialises in family law and the really tough issues bound up within it. She is a deeply committed Christian, and she was reflecting on how she cannot share her faith in her professional life, not because she doesn't want to, but because her professional neutrality is crucially important. However, she expressed the hope that her faith affected everything she did, the conversations she had, the ethical standards she supported, the relationships with fellow lawyers. We never know when the seeds that we scatter will come to fruition. And the second parable, the parable of the mustard seed, starting off so tiny and turning into such a large tree, reminds us that we equally do not know what God will make of the smallest of our efforts in his name or the smallest of groups of people. After all, there were only 13 people at the Last Supper, the number with all their faults and failings that began the church and turns into the millions and millions of Christians of all time and all place. Once more, we are gathered at the Eucharistic table to bring all the earthly things we are, the broken, muddled, happy, confused, ordinary people that we are, to feed on the heavenly food that is the broken and risen Christ. From here we go out fed and sustained, but not knowing where we will cooperate with God in the scattering of his seed and the loving of his people and be living parables of hope. Amen.